Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
September 4th, 2015, you're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Are you shocked that poker rooms around the country hire very attractive waitresses?
My jaw is on the ground.
It's revealing that, you know, it's like so transparent that they do these practices.
I'm on the road half the year in casinos all the time, and I have never seen an attractive cocktail waitress ever.
Wow.
And all of a sudden now Phil Ivey says I'm missing him.
What is he talking about? I have no idea.
Crazy, isn't it?
Maybe he should not tip his waitresses, and then he'll find out how ugly they can get.
Oh, very man. Nice, very nice.
Thank you.
All right, so what we're talking about here is Phil Ivey, who, in response to a board got a lawsuit seeking a return of $9.6 million he won a Baccarat. They're not giving me any money back that I won.
Right? Oh, man.
Of course, they're accusing him of using edge sorting, but he says the casino is his own type of edge sorting, Chris. Flying guests full of free alcohol and dispatching, quote, a bevy of Borgata babes, are called, to distract him while he played. And my favorite part of this, too, is he said he got quite a few phone numbers.
Oh, man. I gotta ask, does this fall into the category of two wrongs do not make a right? I mean, I don't really care what the casino is doing. It's what you're doing or what you're accused of, right? I mean, why would a lawyer, a judge or anyone else even consider that as anything?
I will say I've always found this whole case and lawsuit and whatever you want to call it, situation, fascinating for lots of reasons. Because this whole edge sorting game, we talked about it on the show before too, you know, what he's alleged doing, and for the most part, he's said, yeah, absolutely, you know, but the casino agreed to allow me to do all this stuff, so I think that's fascinating, right?
Right.
I think this is kind of like just this, are you serious kind of response to him, like, come on, you know, you're accusing me of doing everything I possibly can to win money from you, and same time, that's like, you've never done that in the past before. This is not why you give people free drinks. You give people free drinks because you're just a nice casino. You know, you just hire hot cocktail waitresses because that's just who you like to hire. You know, come on. The casino does a lot of stuff to separate you from your money, and I just was doing some stuff to separate the casino from his money. So let's just dismiss all that crazy stuff and then get down to whether I really won or not, which obviously he claims he does. So I think that's kind of the thing. I mean, it's kind of funny on the outside to look at it, but, you know, it's just one of those kind of getting down in the mud with people on their level.
Yeah, they're mudslinging. I mean,
you want to be ridiculous? I'll be ridiculous.
But still, if edge sorting is the reason that they think he cheated, right? I mean, that's what they said. That was his method of cheating, quote unquote, whatever.
Yeah, I guess we got to be careful on who's saying what. Story. This term, I don't know whether they're using that or he's using that, but clearly they're trying to say that whatever he did was against the rules, and he is saying whatever he did was within the rules.
Right.
So how's that?
Right. So that's better. But the mudslinging is just hilarious. It's just distraction, and it means nothing. He's the one on trial. It's got nothing to do with what they do for practices. And, I mean, he doesn't have to go there and play poker. He doesn't have to go there to play Baccarat. He could, you know what I mean? He's going there under what they're doing. And so they're saying, hey, it doesn't matter what we do.
Right, right, right. I mean, that's a fair point. Yeah, but again, I think it goes back to what I was saying. It's just, you know, hey, come on.
They know he's trying to.
Here's so I can give you all kinds of lists. You know, you argue with your spouse. You know, and yeah. Oh, you do this. All right, well, okay, you want to say that? Here's all the things you do that annoy me.
Doesn't really that annoy me
at all, right? You know,
you were too readily with that answer, buddy. I think I've talked to Laura. Here are all the things that you do that annoy me. Oh, okay, so that's where we're going with this. I gotcha.
But you know, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And none of that helps the argument or right. The lawsuit or the discussion. Right? It just gets people more inflamed, right? So, but you know, when you get upset at somebody, that's what you do. You back up and like, all right, fine.
You want to do that? You want to play that way? That's how it's going to be? I'm going to call your Borgata babes distracting, and I got their phone numbers.
Now, I will say, though, the more I travel, the more I find casinos that do not comp alcohol now. So that's not a given by any stretch of imagination. And actually, you know, all the poker rooms in Florida, none of them comp.
Right.
So, but there's a lot of places now that don't do that anymore. And to the point now where a lot of places when the cocktail waitress comes over, hey, can I get you something? I'm like, it depends.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you this dollar, maybe two. Is that going to be enough to get me something? No, sorry. Yeah, she is. I'm like, all right, thank you.
Now, some of them are because the state doesn't allow it, right? Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's
like Florida, right? I mean,
sometimes it's, you know, yeah, right. The casino decides it doesn't need to, or it's not a competitive market, or it needs to, whatever. There are lots of reasons for it. But I've just noticed a lot more because, you know, growing up as a kid, you know, and, you know, dad taking to Vegas and couldn't play anything, right? But, you know, back in those days, you know, everything was free in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, here's the drink. Sit down and play some blackjack. Oh, you guys want to go to dinner? Hey, great. Go. Have fun.
Stay here for the night.
Finish up for the show at 10 o'clock. Yeah, and stay the night. Come back next week when you have more money. And it's a different world now.
Yeah.
And this next item is definitely a different world, right?
Can't believe
it.
Leave it up to you to find the poker part of it, too.
Well, I try hard not to bring stuff on the show that's not somehow tied to poker. Right? Sometimes it's a stretch, and I admit this is a stretch.
Right, like parking garages.
Well, casinos and poker rooms have parking garages.
Yes,
that's
true.
The link.
That's how we relate to it.
All right, so hundreds of Pokemon enthusiasts. First of all, Pokemon enthusiasts, come on.
I can't believe that's still around, that game.
I can't believe people are still enthusiastic about it.
I know.
Apparently there are. But hundreds of them descended on Boston last month for a tournament featuring a $25,000 prize. And we'll get back to this in a minute, that, you know, there's nowhere in Boston where we can go and play poker for $25,000 prize, but these Pokemon freaks show up at $1,000, whatever, right?
Yep.
But it looks like as if a couple of the players didn't want to take any chances. Two of them were arrested after a tip led authorities to find a cache of weapons in their car, including an AR-15 assault rifle.
Oh, man.
Apparently they were planning to take out some competitors. And a Washington Post article about the incident, of course, found a way to drag poker's darker days into this new Pokemon street toughs by saying, quote, that was poker, a game associated with the Wild Wild West, and still notorious for high stakes, high tempers, and hijinks. Kind of clever writing there, by the way.
Yeah.
But this is Pokemon.
No, see, it's not Pokemon, it's money.
That's right.
This is 25 grand, is what they should have said. All right. Man,
high
stakes,
high tempers, and hijinks. It all works right here, too, right?
Yeah. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous to even bring poker up. God, people just can't let go of the stereotype and the old ways, you know?
Yeah, at least they threw in the associated with Wild West. So, I'm fine. I mean, here's the thing. You can't whitewash history as much as people try to do it sometimes, right? So, obviously, poker in the past, in the Wild Wild West, was a deadly, deceitful, disgusting game, probably, right?
Mm.
As romantic as it is to look back at it now. So, yeah, I mean, we can't deny that that's what it was. But, you know, it's like, come on. You know, it's like, you know, hey, didn't you pee your pants in high school? Yes, I did. Why does it matter on a 45? I've learned to control my bladder now. Quit bringing that up 40 years later.
Exactly.
You know, so that's kind of the thing.
I mean, you don't look at Rembrandt's finger paintings from kindergarten and say, oh, look, he was a terrible artist. He's still terrible now. No. He was fantastic later on in life. Things get better. Why keep bringing it up that he, you know, painted his dog with his head on his ass when he was... No! Now you have to move forward and appreciate what he is now. That's why you got to appreciate poker for what it is now.
But here's another interesting way of looking at this, though. Obviously, there's nothing to do with poker here. Now, I don't know what this Pokemon is. I guess you have cards. Maybe you play with cards.
It's like Magic the Gathering, but with
right.
Pokemon
is it with cards,
cards
though? Okay, yeah, so maybe cards. That's why people are thinking of poker. I mean, I guess I was the small, very small silver lining here is that people equate playing a game for big money with poker.
Yeah.
Which I think, if people start thinking about it, that's what's... Well, it's not the most ridiculous thing. Most ridiculous thing is Pokemon players with AR-15 assault rifles. But secondly, would be that you could play this card game with Pokemon characters on it for $25,000, and no one bats an eye. But if they have kings and queens and jacks on them, then, oh my gosh, FBI's involved and you're in jail running a house of gambling, right?
There you go, buddy. There you go. That's your
just
thing.
Just showing the ridiculousness.
You just put Pokemon characters on the poker cards, and then when they break in and try to raid the place. We're playing Pokemon. It's Pokemon.
Yeah.
Look, the Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not, we're not playing poker. It's Pokemon. Yeah. It sounds like poker, Pokemon. We're just playing Pokemon.
But you know, then what the cops would say is like, all right, where are the assault rifles? We know what you badasses do when you play this game. Taking you down now. So you can't win, right? We can't win.
So you can't like have the enchanted bunny, you know, be shot with an assault rifle. You have to combat him with like a rock or something when you're playing this game on the card. You can't just go to your car and pull out a rifle. That's crazy. So what were they going to do with the freaking rifle? I mean, they're going to go hold up the guy they didn't win on their own? They'd have to go hold up the guy who won or whatever? It's crazy.
Yeah, you got to people show people who's boss, you know?
Man, that is just insane. It's Pokemon.
No, fortunately, nothing happened here. I mean, you know, deadly or anything like that. But can you imagine that? You just take down this Pokemon tournament. You've got $25,000 in your wallet, more money than you probably ever had in your life because you're a Pokemon enthusiast, right?
Right.
And you're walking out. Hey, I'm going to paint the town red tonight before I go to bed at 8 o'clock. And all of a sudden, the guy's pointing an AR-15 rifle at you. I'm like, are you serious? I think that's what I would have to say.
Are you serious?
I'd be like, I know you're just going to blow me away here, but are you serious? Pokemon.
Do you realize how many Pikachu cards I could have bought with this $25,000? I remember that from like my stepson was like collecting them 8-10 years ago, and that's Pikachu, is a little yellow guy, I think. Pointy ears.
Might have to install a metal detector in the house now. Can't be too careful.
Oh man, that's just absolutely crazy. Hey, any updates? We would like to congratulate Leslie Mesmer of the Horseshoe Casino Cleveland for being voted Antiup's most popular dealer this year. Thank you to all the dealers who applied and competed, and thanks to everyone who voted. Pretty crazy, huh? It finally happened.
Absolutely.
Been building up for a long time, and just fantastic story.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with it this year, so hopefully we'll give it a whirl again next year.
Yep. All right, Harrah's Southern California will award two more packages for our January 24th Antiup Poker Cruise out of Los Angeles in a drawing on September 26th. Earn tickets and cash games starting September 1st, so you can start right now. And then also, Dover Downs Hotel and Casino in Delaware will be hosting Antiup Set Sail Series the next 2 months, awarding 5 Antiup Poker Cruises in each. The first is September 3rd to the 7th, so hurry up, with cruises awarded during the first break of each event to players in the tournament or cash games. And the second is October 28th to November 1st, with players earning 1 drawing ticket for each tournament they enter. More details can be found at AntiupPokerTour.com. Hey, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@AntiupMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we'll do with Call the Foreign Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. This comes from Adam Burgoyne. Did we ever settle on how to say his name? I have no idea.
I like your Swedish Chef from the Muppets pronunciation.
Horrig. Let's call him Adam B.
You know, they're bringing that back.
Oh, I know.
They're bringing it back.
On ABC, a TV show.
Yeah, did we ever talk about that? That's awesome.
No, I don't think we're talking about it, but it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere, so. All right, so he says, I'm going to call him Adam B. So I was playing at a friendly home game tonight when a situation came up. One guy ended the game about an hour in and went all in blind. He does this just about every time, and it's become a punchline. The game is small, and we are all there to mainly have a good time, though I always want to win money when I play. Now when player A goes all in blind, if I'm up at least a buy-in, I'm calling with a huge range. I look down at King 9 of Hearts and call. Another player at the table, who is a professional poker dealer and whose game I respect, ponders for a solid minute. He starts talking and says he feels like he should just shove over the top. Inside, I'm thinking, you shove, I'm out. On the outside, I'm just staring at the felt, not moving. He calls and we check to the river, which pairs my 9 and gives me the win. He rolls Queen 10 of spades, and I confess to him that his shove would have gotten me out. I said to him that I'm not sure I would have called with Queen 10 after another caller. What hands do you call a blind all-in with?
None. Moving on. Call the floor! Find yourself in a situation?
Come on. There got to be hands you call an all-in.
No, I know. I think we had something like this similar not too long ago.
Right, because I talked about how I did it to a guy at Sarasota.
Right, right. So, I'm always going to go back to what I talk about in cash games and tournaments. In cash games, there's no reason to play these flip-a-cup shenanigans, I think, you know, and this is a little bit different. I think the last situation we had, the guy was going all in blind every hand, right? So at that point, at some point, he was forcing you to do something. Here, it sounds like this guy shows up, hey, Johnny's here, and goes all in one hand, and everybody laughs about it. And if that's the case, then I'm going to let Johnny have his fun, pick up his, you know, 75 Skittles, right, or whatever it is, 70, fraction, 0.075. Skittles, and move on to the next hand. Now, if he does it all the time, then I guess it goes back to that conversation we had not too long ago. And I don't know, King Nine Hearts, yeah, I'll probably do that. But this is kind of the problem with the scenario, is then you've got people behind you,
right,
and you don't know what they're going to do. And he's very right. At this point, if somebody decides they want to go over the top of you, now you've just committed a lot of chips thinking you're going to go up against one guy with a hand like King Nine, and now you got a second player involved.
I agree, and I also think it depends on where you are at the table in relation to this guy's all-in. If I am the button and he goes all-in under the gun first hand, and all I have are the blinds behind me, I think I consider it. If it's, or if I'm in the blinds and it's folded to me, I definitely consider it with King 9. If I'm right next to him under the gun, and I know I've got 8 people to fade after that or whatever, then I'm thinking, King 9's not that strong to call this all-in. Maybe a suited ace, or ace-jack, or ace-king, ace-queen, you know, ace-10, maybe I do it. Maybe a small pair I do it or something, but I got to be later in the hand to King 9's okay. That's probably, it's definitely better than the average Queen 7. So
right, right, yep.
But if I have to fade half the table or more than half the table with it to decide if they're going to take advantage of it and go all in, you know, I want to at least have a hand that I can win with multiple players. So,
but I think the most interesting part of this is the guy that talked about shoving over the top.
Yeah, with Queen 10. Yeah,
you know, because I think in this whole scenario, that's the most effective play here. Is you can't do anything about the crazy guy that just could go all in blind, because everybody's got their own idea of what they need to call with for that, right? But right, now you've got somebody else's dead money in there, right? And obviously you don't know how strong their hand is. But I would like to say, if we took a national survey of poker players, I think most would probably come in with a wider range, as he's talking about here, right? So now when you show up over the top of them, now you're going to say, my gosh, now... That guy has to have a really good hand, right?
Yeah.
And so now, do I really want to risk the rest of my hand, or my chips, going up against two hands, one of them that I think definitely is better than me, and the other one I have no idea how good it is.
Yeah.
And lay down now, at that point, now, you know, it depends on how much you have there, but I guess it depends on the possibility you're not going to make any money off that at all, you know, if you get that guy to fold.
Yeah, see, here's the thing.
But if you get that guy to fold, and then your hand holds up, now you've just won, you know, an extra, I don't know how much, he didn't say how much it was, but, you know.
Right, well, you're getting that guy's money.
You're trapping that money in the pot, which I think is pretty effective if you have the stones to do it. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Right, if you have two guys all in that pot, and instead a guy buys for 100, and now your other friend's called 100, and you shove for 300, you're risking 100. If you know you're going to get that guy out, or at least think you might, you're risking 100 to win 200 rather than
actually
even 50-50.
Right?
Well, yeah, you'd win your own 100. Well, the other guy didn't go all in. Yeah, he just called his all in. So,
right.
But you know what I'm saying. You're putting 100 out there to win 200. So, you know, you're getting better odds to play Queen 10 against one guy with, you know, it's like that guy goes all in for 200 and all you have to do is call 100 to call his all in. You're going to do it with Queen 10. So that's, yeah, I agree with you. Coming over the top is a strong play. provided you know the guy with King Nine would do it with King Nine and not only do it with King King, you know. You gotta know how he's gonna do that. So I guess it depends how often this guy goes all in blind.
Which I think, I mean, hey, we're talking about a home game here, right? Where everybody knows everybody, and this guy obviously does it often enough that it's become a punchline, right?
Yeah.
So I would think at this point, one, you've probably watched the other players and how they play against him, right? And two, I'm sure you guys go out for a beer afterwards and like, oh my gosh, Cassandra's doing it again. And then probably have the same conversation, right?
Yeah.
So now you've got some more information about it, and I guess that's what I'd be waiting for. Normally, I would just get out of the way of this guy, let him have his fun for the one hand. But if not, I'm looking for an opportunity, not just to win his money, but win some other dead money.
And he does say it's a small game. And, you know,
right. And, so that's the other thing.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, the fact that it's small, I mean, it could be a $50 buy-in or $25 buy-in. You're playing for, you know, one dime, one quarter Skittle kind of thing. You know, who knows? So, you know, it's a funny joke. So if you're sitting there going, I'll call his all in with King Nine. What's the worst that can happen? I can lose a Grant. I mean, you know, Andrew Jackson or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, so then, all right, that's something. But, you know, if you're sitting down, you got 300 in front of you, he goes all in for a $200 buy-in. I'm not going to do it with King Nine out of position.
No.
You know, I want to be late in that hand so I don't have to fade a lot of people. But that's pretty funny. We don't have people like that in our games. Our games are pretty straightforward. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Not to say that's not fun. I get the whole fun part of that. And not that we don't want to have our game fun. But,
right.
You know, one of the things I like about our game is we found a good way of mixing fun and serious play.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We get better. Of course, that's assuming we have a rabbit game. You know, I was talking to Laura the other day. I have almost no free Saturdays the rest of this year.
Wow.
And we haven't had a home game at my house in months.
Way. It's been a real long time. Actually, I haven't had a home game period in a long time, but especially your house. I can't remember the last time I played at your house.
Crazy, right?
Man, we're
life's busy.
We're an abomination to our profession.
Well, now a lot of times I'm out of town, or it's because I'm playing poker.
Playing
somewhere
poker
else.
Elsewhere else, right?
Yeah,
so I have no excuse.
Pin it on me. Yeah,
I have no excuse.
You're a loser.
Hey, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Snow Kwame, Casino Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. Vic G is in the news again. He says, we're in a 1-2 no-limit hold'em cash game in a Florida card room. An older gentleman moves all in for $60 and is called by another player. The older gentleman immediately tables king-king, and the dealer deals out the flop turn and river, which contains an ace. The other player then holds up an ace but doesn't table his hand. The older gentleman picks up his cards, flips them over, and pushes them ahead. Another player at the table asks to see the remaining player's hand, but before anyone can react to this request, he tosses both of his cards face down on the muck, as the dealer mucks both hands and pushes the pot to him. Neither hand is retrievable, and the player who wanted to see the winner's hand says the older gentleman should have been awarded the pot since he was the only one who tabled the hand. I think there are 3 points in favor of giving the pot to the older gentleman. One, the winning player might have misread his hand and mucked. The dealer can't help read his hand without it being tabled. This violates the one player to a hand rule. Two, the winning hand was never tabled as stated in the rules. If the rule doesn't apply in this situation, then when would it apply? Why even have the rule if not for situations like this? And finally, three, if the floor was called over and had to review the tapes, it's possible that the cameras wouldn't have seen the player's ace as he held it up, but it would see the properly tabled kings.
Ah, this is going to be an interesting one. All right, Elliot says, your bullet-pointed analysis is pretty darn good. Hey, congrats, Vic.
Nice.
I would like to add that it seemed as though the dealer's performance was spotty and indifferent here. The dealer should have read the older gentleman's hand as kings as soon as the river was placed. Speaking up or not doesn't change the apparent consensus regarding the contents of his hand, but it is the proper way to run the game, and the use of proper procedure can make many of these situations disappear. When the backs of all the cards in one's hands are on the table, that hand is tabled and live. The player with the ace did not satisfy this very important condition. The dealer should have pushed the pot to the player of the kings after he mucked the hands that these players gave him. And the dealer's next mistake was to push a pot to a player with an unread hand when a tabled and identifiable hand was involved at showdown. If I were the floor person calling this table, I would not hesitate to remove the value of the pot plus the blinds, if neither player were in the blind, and minus the rake and jackpot fee and award this money to the player with the kings. The intent of most rooms in public poker rooms is to make sure that the best hand gets the pot in situations where the betting is complete. The rules governing the showdown, hand protection, and one player to a hand are some of the most important in the game of poker, and those rules define the kings as the best hand in this situation.
So basically, the guy with the ace, like, held it up in the air, like, showed him the ace, and then mucked his hand and got the winning pot. Is that how? Is that basically what he's saying? Right?
I think what happens, he showed the guy the ace. Hey, I got you beat. Because he saw the guy's kings, right?
Right.
And the king's guy goes, okay, fine, and mucked, and then the other guy mucked.
Okay.
So I guess it's all the how it worked out, but it sounds like both hands were mucked by the dealer at the same time. And that's the case, that it's a tie, and only one hand was tabled, and she'd get the pot.
Right.
Now, obviously, that guy with the ace is probably going to go livid, but that's why you have rules, and that's why you have floors to come over to remind folks, and that's how players learn how to properly play in a poker room.
Yes.
Sometimes you make a decision that you don't think it's a problem. Somebody identifies why it's a problem. You just lost $200, and you're not going to make that mistake again, right?
Right.
And that's really what happened here, unfortunately.
So, basically...
Now, the other thing, too, is that we do talk a lot on the show about winning on a technicality.
Right.
I would say if I had the kings and the guy, and obviously I knew the guy had an ace, I would probably have somewhat of a problem accepting this pot. Because I know I have the best hand. I mean, obviously he mucked, and that's, you know, so that could go both ways. I can see some players say, hey, sorry, he mucked, you know. But at the same time, I think people at the table know that he had the best hand. So that's a more difficult thing for me as a player, right?
Right.
So I don't want to be known as somebody that wins on technicalities. And if I clearly know that I didn't win the pot, then I don't really want it. At the same time, it's money. It'd be nice to have, right? And that's a tough thing. That would be a tough spot. And this is what's most unfortunate. That's a tough spot for that player, I think. Now, I know there's probably listeners out there going, Scott, you're off your rocker. I'm taking that money every day and twice on Sunday, right?
Right.
But if you do, I think it put me in a bad situation. I did nothing wrong, right?
Right.
I bet I called. I tabled my hand correctly. The other guy didn't table his hand correctly, but I know he has the best hand, so what do you do at that point? Do you reward somebody for breaking the rules even though he had the right hand? Or do you that's tough. And
well,
I think that's why these rules are important. It's because it's not just what you do, it's what you do and how it affects other people at the table.
Okay, but now you just said that these rules are important, and they are rules, so although you may feel bad about it, if the rule says that you have to have a tabled hand to win, you've done what you're supposed to do to win. To say that this guy had the better hand, he did not actually show his hand, so it's not officially a hand yet until he shows it. So, I understand what you're saying. You just would feel, you'd be like, oh, shucks, you know, what am I here to take back your money or something? But really, why even have a floor then ever? If you have your rules in your favor,
that's what
no one else
that's
agrees
what's difficult,
you.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the situation is, and I'm going to say 75, maybe 80% of people would say that in this opportunity, if someone was telling you with the kings to take the spot, they would take that pot, right?
Yeah.
Probably pretty safe to say.
Right.
So it's just that other 20% or the scruple people like me that are like, God, I really don't want to win this hand on technicality. Obviously, I know he had me beat, right? I mean, just based off of what Vic is saying.
Right.
Obviously, we don't know what the board was, but, you know, let's just assume it's a situation where all I have is kings and there's an ace on board, right?
And he has an ace in his hand.
And he has an ace in hand. There's no way I can win this hand, right? It doesn't matter what a second card is,
right,
which is the whole reason that we're having this discussion, right?
Right.
Now I know I didn't win. Now, obviously, he didn't table his hand correctly, but I still know I didn't win that hand properly.
Right, I know what you're saying. Like,
so
the laws
I guess
of
what
poker,
I'm saying is, hey, dude, I don't want to win on a technicality, but I really hope you learn a lesson from this. You know, take the pot, but if you do that again, I'm taking the pot from you.
Yeah.
Because I'm giving you fair warning that you're not playing by the rules, but I know you had the best hand, and I'm not going to win on a technicality. That would be one solution to it, and I'm sure, like I said, lots of players are like steaming right now thinking, why would you ever do that? But that's what I'm dealing with, right?
Let me ask
and
you
if
this.
If you don't, then what you don't know is for people saying, God, that's Scott Long. He likes to win hands on technicalities. Wouldn't somebody fairly say that, right?
Yeah.
And that's tough. And again, that's what I'm saying. I did nothing wrong in this hand, and then to have people go out and tell them, hey, that guy, you know, he used a technicality. That's a problem, and I didn't cause it. My only solution to that is to give the guy the pot, which is what I'm saying.
Are you allowed to do that? That's what I wanted to ask you. I don't remember ever. I don't think you're allowed to do that.
No, I don't think at the table. I think what you could do is you know, meet him in the bathroom later. Well, bathroom says the wrong place. parking lot or somewhere else. Say, hey, let's go get a drink. And, you know, here's $200. You know, I was a pot. I guess that's the way you would do it.
Yeah.
So I guess that does give you a little bit more protection that, you know, you could say, hey, I would love to give you the pot, but I know I'm not allowed to. Maybe that's it. That's the ultimate solution, I guess, maybe. The other thing, it's a really crappy situation to put me in. That's what I'm upset about. And this other guy, I don't think, seems to care. He's like, hey, I showed an ace. You know I have the best hand. Give it to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you knew the rule. Because a lot of people don't understand that you have to table your cards to win. You show your cards, a lot of people think of it as.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So he's like, you know, hey, what's the deal? I have an ace, right?
Yeah,
yeah. It's kind of like A Few Good Men. You know, what did we do wrong? We did nothing wrong.
You can't handle the kid.
We should have stuck up for Willie, and we didn't.
We were taught to.
So, you know, it's the same situation, right?
Yeah. Hey, guess what? We got a brand new Mally's move, so let's hear it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're back in the $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash Game. Only 15 minutes have passed since the last hand, and this time we find ourselves on the button. The blinds post, it's folded around to an MP who makes the call. There are two more callers to the hijack, the villain from the last hand, and he makes it $12 to go, his standard raise. He started the hand with 150 to our 300. Remember, this is the guy who knows just enough to get himself into trouble and then likes to make snarky comments after he gets beat, criticizing others' play. We look down at the Queen of Hearts, Queen of Clubs. For a split second, we think about stringing this guy along and only making the call, but with several other people still in the hand, we can't give someone a good price to come in. We make it $30 to go. Perhaps that's a little light. It gets folded around to the hijack, who makes a snide remark about donkeys, and then makes the call. He checks dark as the flop comes down the Jack of Diamonds, Nine of Clubs, Seven of Spades. This seems like a fairly safe flop, and with about $65 in the pot, we make a $40 bet. Our opponent wastes little time in shoving his remaining stack. So, it's $80 to us, and we've got an overpair. What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. A good friend Jeff Hayashi is back.
Nice.
And he says it's been a while since he sent his hand a week, but he says, I'm normally the one who sends you 8-16 limit hands, but here's a 1-1 no limit hold'em game hand I had. Everyone is a recreational player. Myself and one other player who is not in the hand below in the game are the most experienced, buying is $100. So already, without even reading the hand, I'm interested because going from 8-16 to 1-1 no limit is quite a switch, I think.
Oh, yeah. What?
You know, 2-4 limit to 1-1, almost exact same game. 4-8 is almost a 3-6-4-8, but when you're 8-16, that's a serious. That's where you start to get into a serious level of limit. And 1-1 no limit is not serious at all. all right, there are nine players, three limpers, and oh boy, I wish you would have said where he is. All right, well, we don't know where he is, but he has a king of clubs, queen of diamonds, and there are three limpers in front of us.
Hmm. Well, here's the deal. I probably wouldn't limp, too. I mean, I may raise. The problem is that this is a trap hand. For those of you who don't know what a trap hand is, you're trapping yourself by playing a hand that has a second best anything. So if somebody come up against ace-king, then and you pair your king, you're going to have kicker problems. If you come up against ace-queen and you pair your queen, you're going to have kicker problems. So these are what's known as trap hands, where you feel strong about them because they look pretty, they're a marriage, you think it's a great hand, and it's really not. Sometimes when people have already limped, I like to limp with big cards, because most of the time people are limping with small cards or suited connectors or a suited ace, and the strength of your hand is hidden. So, I don't know, I might be pushed to raise here too. When I like to enter a pot, I like to enter it for a raise. And get this dead money out of there too. So I don't know, but they're not suited, so it's just basically two Broadway cards that are looking for a home. And so I don't know. Maybe I could play it anyway, really. I could even fold this, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I could make a defense for a fold too.
Yeah. So I could play it anyway. For the sake of this one, I'm gonna limp along and see what he does, just for fun.
All right. So here's the thing I would say is I can defend all three. I mean, again, we're talking about no limit here. There's no reason to get involved in a dangerous hand if you don't need to, because it's not a tournament. And this could be a dangerous hand, so just let it go. And then no danger, right? You don't win anything, but you're not going to lose your whole stack over second best hand, which is what you said, right?
Right.
So I'm fine with that. If I raise, obviously I'm playing my position. We don't know what position he's in, but it seems like obviously with three limpers, he's got position. I'm playing position, and there's a case to be made for that, and you get some dead money in there if you thin it down, and then you can represent any hand at that point. No one's going to know you have king of clubs, queen of diamonds, right?
Right.
So definitely I could raise here. And then limp, if I limp, it's, you know, it's going to be a buck. There's already some money in there, but if I limp, I'm going to need to hit this like super hard.
Exactly.
So if I'm not willing to hit it super hard, then I got to either raise or fold.
Right. You always have to have a contingent plan, something that you have to follow or be willing to follow, provided, you know, when you get more information later. So if you have a king, queen, and it comes out ace, queen, three, and you got guys betting, okay, well, you got to be willing to let this hand go. You know, if you hit it king, queen, four, okay, now you've hit it very well, and you got to play accordingly. So you always have to have a plan going in. This hand could be anything.
I'll say this, too. I mean, this is also a hard hand to hit hard.
Right.
So, I mean, you just mentioned king, queen, right, which is kind of what we're probably thinking, top two.
Right.
But think about some other hands that will limp. You know, ace 10, ace jack. Obviously, you have those hands beat when you had two pair, but, you know, the wrong card comes on the turn or river.
Yeah, jack 10. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're dead with that. So it's a different story with that. So, and then if you hit trips, then you're right back to what you talked about with kicker problems, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's a really hard hand to hit hard, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, probably all the more reason not to limp because our plan is to hit it hard, and I don't know really what that is, aside from quads.
King, king, queen. I'll take that.
Yeah, there you go. Or both. Yeah, right.
So it's worth risking a dollar for the 1 in 47,000.
Yeah, I guess that's the point. So, I mean, so I've just talked myself out of limping, based off the fact that I just decided I can't really hit this hand hard.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable about it.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to limp just because I want to see what happens, but I think if I'm playing like on the ship or in the home game and I see limp, 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 and it gets me with king, queen, I'm either folding or raising, generally.
No, obviously the other side of raising, too, is, like I said, you can represent any hand, right? So it's not like you're... Yeah, so if now you're raising, then you can do all kinds of things with it, right?
Yeah. Of course, if you raise and somebody calls, they very well have the hand that traps your king, queen, so now you're pushing your luck, too. So no matter what you do, you're screwed with his hand. That's why he sent it in.
Fold.
Fold it.
No problems with folding. All right. So he made it 8 to go.
So he raised. Good.
Yep. And he got 2 callers and is in position. Again, we don't know what position. So he thinned the field a little bit.
All right. So we got about 26, 27 bucks in the pot, probably.
Yeah, it looks like 24 minus the drop. So 24 after the drop.
Yeah, because he had some limpers earlier, so he has to have something in there. So, okay. All right, 24 bucks.
All right, flop is queen of spades, 10 of clubs, 9 of hearts.
Okay, queen of spades, 10 of clubs, 9 of hearts?
Yep.
That just said, okay. See, now we're screwed.
Right? This is not hitting it hard, right?
No, we have top pair, but only second kicker, and we have straight draws up the yin-yang, right? King Jack just crushes us, and that's the type of hand that might consider calling a raise. You know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, I don't know if somebody's actually playing 8-jack or something, but that's possible. It's a juicy hand. People like to play jack-8 for some reason. My wife used to love that hand. So, it's possible. So, really, yeah, we hit it hard in the sense that, you know, if you had raised and only got one player, then you might say, okay, I might be in good shape here, and you're going to go with it. But, again, this person could have ace-queen. You know, I don't know if he does or not. We're going to find out. But I do have to bet because I did now that
right,
we've raised.
Exactly. Right. So it's just a matter of what we do when we get raised here because obviously it's a board that somebody probably feels like raising.
Yeah, I'd bet like 18 or 20.
All right. Here it says, I flop top pair, good kicker, gut shot, straight draw on a pretty wet board. Action goes check. Middle position player bets 12 bucks. Now he says, this player is pretty loose and is not afraid to make plays at pots. He has 80 bucks in front of him, and I have him covered.
All right, well, if you have the nuts, you're not going to bet 12 and take the action away from the guy who let out, or you know, who raised preflop. I think you would check and let him bet, and then maybe you check raise or call and wait on the street. Because really, the only hand, I mean, if you have king jack, you know, you're not going anywhere, and you're never going to lose the nuts. Because if an ace comes, as far as a straight, you still have the nuts. You know, so any other lower cards come, you still have the nuts. So really, you have no, you're not in danger at all. So I think I might raise this guy, because what's he betting? Is he betting two pair, and then he's dangerous? Queen 10?
Right, yep.
So I might raise him just to see what's going on, because I was willing to bet about 18-20. He bets 12, which is kind of a weak bet. It's only half the pot at this point. You know, it's not really a big bet. I might bump it up to something.
Yeah, it's really interesting this guy bet into us with this board, I think.
Yeah.
I guess maybe it's, again, it's 1-1, so maybe he's just trying to, you know, first level thinking, hey, I flopped a street, get out of my way, which doesn't make sense, right? But otherwise, nothing here really makes sense to me on why this guy would bet when we raise preflop and we're still yet to act here.
Yeah, maybe two pair that he's trying to protect? I don't know.
Even that, though, I think you would take the check raise. I mean, that's probably, I would say a hand that hit this but is vulnerable would be a check raise hand.
Yes.
You know, yep. The nuts would be a, you know, check call hand,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And anything else would be a check fold hand. Probably, right?
Yeah.
None of them make sense of betting out to me, I don't think.
All right, so they bet 12.
Unless it's some sort of misdirection, like, you know.
And we have another guy in the hand, too. I think I'll make it. I'll probably make it, like, I don't know, 35 or so to go and just see what happens. Because, I mean, I like top pair, second kicker, but it's such a dangerous. I can't fold it. And I don't know if maybe I do call since, and you know, it's not really a card that can come that can really hurt us other than pairing something that they've hit or something. You know what I mean? Maybe I just call too. I don't know. Maybe I just call. I don't know. You know, because like, well, let's say an ace comes, that can hurt us. If a king comes, that can hurt us because any jack gives him a straight. So really, our hand's not going to improve much anyway unless a jack comes. And even then, we don't have the nuts because we have king-queen. We don't have the king-queen.
Right. So I think if we're talking about the player that bet, nothing makes sense that we can't beat right now, I guess is what we're saying, right?
Right, I think so.
My concern is the other guy that's in the hand. Now, obviously, he checked here, but we just went through all the scenarios where nothing here on this board makes sense to bet, right?
Right.
But there's a lot of hands that you might check raise with. So it's quite possible this guy that checked already might be salivating now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's tough.
So is that
I guess in
to
that
call?
Sense, it could be a reason to call, right?
Yeah. Because if he's going to raise, I might as well lose 12 instead of 50. You know?
Right.
All right. So why don't we just call?
Yeah. It seems kind of weird, but yeah, I think that's what I need to do.
All right. We're going to call 12 bucks.
All right, that's exactly what our hero did. He says, wow. I don't think there's really an argument for doing anything else. I have top pair, but I don't love it. If I make a raise, I'm probably only going to get called by a better hand and will fold all worse hands. I don't think I'll get any pair straight draw hand to fold, so I just call. Third player calls as well.
Okay. Well, now we got to be real careful.
Yep. Turn is the four of hearts. Our board is queen of spades, ten of clubs, nine of hearts, four of hearts. And as he says, a blank other than putting a backdoor heart draw on the board. $60 in the pot. And goes check, and then the middle position player bets 30.
Okay, so again, it's not a huge bet. It's half the pot again. So he's doing the same thing. So nothing has changed. I don't see us folding.
I think there's one thing that's changed now. Okay. The one thing that's changed is that we called last time because we were worried, not worried, but we were curious whether the player that checked was going to check Grace.
Right.
And he didn't. He just called. And now he checked again. So to me, he is clearly on the draw here. And we still don't know what the other player has, but all we talked about is that it doesn't make any sense for him to bet anything that has his beat right now, I don't think. And this card doesn't help, right?
Right.
So we're back in the same scenario as we were on the flop, but we had that added information of not being worried about what the checking player has right now. But definitely worried about what he could get on the river. So I'm definitely raising here.
So you're going to make it like 90 or 80 to go?
Well, the middle
like
position player only had 80 after the last hand, so he's only got 50 more in front of him. So, I mean, I'll probably make it 80 and put them all in.
Right.
I don't know what the other guy has, so I guess that makes a difference. But, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm making a pretty good deductive reasoning that I think I'm good here.
That's a good point about the other player.
I don't want that check guy getting there. So, you know, if he wants to continue to draw for $80, you know, that's his mistake, and I'll take it. But I don't want to. I don't want to let him. He might not even be willing to do it for 30. But I don't want to take that chance.
Are you at all concerned at a guy who only had about?
And if he does fold, then there's nothing else we can do, right? So I mean, we put the guy all in. So now we can't get pushed off this hand on the river for any reason if we wanted to. In case he's just totally running a bluff, which makes less sense, I think.
So this guy that's been betting, how much did he have to start the hand again? 80.
80, 20. He had 100.
All right, so he still has, if that's 42 and then the 80, so he basically has half his stack left, and he bets 30 of 50 in the end? No, the 30 was the last pot, the last pet, right? So I guess, I was just trying to make
80
sure.
80 at the beginning of this street and bet 30 of it.
Right, he bet 30 of it. So that's
50 behind.
Okay, so that's not like, why didn't he just shove then? Because he's still trying to get some money on it. All right.
Right.
I don't know if I shove. I guess it depends on what the other guy has in front of him. If it's only going to be a $50 bet on the end anyway, I'm not going anywhere. Maybe I try to keep it.
I think that's kind of immaterial because I don't think that guy. I think that guy's done with his hand, other than hoping that he can get to the river cheaply. And I don't think the $30 is getting in there cheaply. So I think he's done anyhow. But I don't want to take that chance.
Do you feel bad at all that we're going to be shoving and basically spending $100 on his hand with king queen? On the top pair?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the other thing. I'm gonna, if I end up losing this hand, I'm gonna go back and remind myself from 4 streets ago.
Right.
This is why you don't play king queen in a cash game. There's no reason to.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you're gonna.
So
shove.
We're into it now. So now we got to make our best decisions. We can't go back and say, "Oh, I really shouldn't have played king queen. I'm gonna fold here."
Right. I liked your
right now,
analysis
everything that
though.
We talked about makes it sound like we're winning.
I liked your analysis of the guy checking, so we're not worried about that now. So that's interesting. I guess I'll go along with the show since it's not that much more money anyway.
Okay. Our hero says, I call for pretty much all the same reasons I stayed above. Early position player folds. So I guess I was right. That guy was going to get out regardless. So so the fact that he did, then maybe in hindsight, result-oriented, the $30 call is probably going to be better. I guess we'll find out.
Right.
The river is the queen of hearts. So our final board is queen of spades, 10 of clubs, 9 of hearts, 4 of hearts, queen of hearts. So we improve the trips. Flush gets there as well.
So he called.
$120 in the pot.
He just called the bet and the other guy folds. So now there's a bunch in the pot. And really, I can't fold for anything now. So it makes this is all immaterial.
$120 the pot in the middle position obviously shoves his last 50, which I would expect him to do.
Right. So I think the guy has queen jack. That's what I think. I think the guy betting has queen jack and we're calling.
Okay. I mean, I already decided last time that I was going to shove.
Yeah.
And I thought we were bed. So nothing changes here unless he had some kind of backdoor hearts that got there. But
I can't fold. Now, especially with trips, and there's only not that much money left for him to call anyway to win a bunch, so I'm not going anywhere.
All right. So our hero says, for the most part, the river is really a blank. What does it change other than the backdoor hearts getting there? Yes, we improve, but is three queens any better than what this player is representing? To me, my hand is still just a bluff catcher on this board. I really only sucked out on 10-9, two-pair hand, but this hand would have. Would this hand check the river, right? At least all straight full houses now flushes. On the bright side, he did bet, which polarizes his range. He has a hand either to bet for value, full houses, flushes, maybe straights, but you think even a straight would be scared of the river, or he has to bet to win the pot with a bluff. I thought for a minute or so and called. Opponent shows Jack 9 offsuit for a pair and missed straight draw. One for the good guys.
Wow, Jack 9. Yeah, it was something like that. I knew it was a pair and a missed draw. You could just tell, because he would have laid the hammer down on the turn if he had something that was vulnerable, or, you know what I mean? It just, that turn bet didn't feel like it was strong enough. I think I would put the hammer down if I had a big hand there, and that queen wouldn't have changed anything. So, for him to bet again, yeah, he's either bluffing or, I guess he's right about that, either bluffing or he has something. But still, he could have thought ace-queen was good there, and had three aces now with a queen kicker and hoping you
absolutely
had king-queen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we didn't really learn the lesson you're supposed to learn by playing this hand. It just means you're supposed to lose with it and realize not to play it. But I think his thought process was pretty good along the way.
And playing it my way, we probably would have got the 50 out of him. I don't think he's going to call that river shove on us, right?
Right. So he basically had a pair of nines and tried to bluff his way out of it. Wow. So then you have to think about what's he doing calling that hand from a raise preflop.
Yeah, so I mean, this guy made terrible. Again, it's 1-1 no limit, right? So we right. expect this. But he made terrible mistakes everywhere, right?
Yep.
He limped with that hand, which is terrible. Then he called the raise, which is terrible.
Then he bet out.
And then on this board, he misrepresented what people would think about the board and decided to bet into us and instead of check raising us. And then now he's forced on the turn to, I guess I got to represent now. And didn't really bet a lot, right?
It's half the pot.
And then on the river, he's like, there's nothing I can do other than to bet to win this and hope the guy's going to fold. But even then, it's impossible to think of the guy folding.
Yeah.
You know, unless we were just on a draw.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense either with how much we invested. But possible, so.
That's the other thing, too, is I had mentioned earlier that people play Jack 8, you know, and wouldn't limp with Jack 8. And then maybe, but I mean, how do you even call a raise after that, too, with Jack 9 offsuit? Wow. Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, that's what happens if you play 1-1.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I don't play 1-1.
That's right.
Oh, we're 2-4. The cockroaches of the poker world. So one last question, because I actually had a good discussion with Jeff about this. Because remember, back he usually is playing 8-16 limit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think my first comment to him was, after reading his hand, I was like, well, you can tell you're a limit player.
Yeah.
Because he did a lot of calling instead of, shoving and pushing the ground. And he made a good point that he's like, no, I think it's... I would have played this differently if it's limit. I would have been raising if it had been limit.
Because he could only get hurt by so much. Right?
Yeah,
when you're
yeah.
raising, it's only one more bet that he may re-raise you with, whereas somebody could re-raise you your whole stack. Now you're put to the test instead of just saying, one more bet.
So essentially he was deciding that he wanted to use pot control because there's no limit, whereas the limit, there is already some built-in pot control because of...
Right,
how much
limits.
We raised.
Yeah, exactly.
Or my point was that, I think the tool of no limit is the fact that you get to pick the bet. Choose your own bet, right?
Yes.
So you can use that ability to push people off hands if you want or extract more money out of them from a hand than you should get. That's the difference in the two games.
Yeah.
And I think here, obviously, it all went our way. And like I said, Jeff got $50 more out of this hand than I would have playing it the way he did. But I definitely would have shoved that turn.
Yeah, the turn was telling on his bet too, the other guy's bet, because if you really have the hand that we're supposed to be afraid of, you're not letting two hearts now get their backdoor and let someone else get into that same straight you already have with a free card on the end or a cheap card. So I think you're putting the hammer down yourself if you have something
that
you should be afraid of.
That's a good point too, because I'm sure some other people are saying, well, Scott, if you already are ahead of him, why do you want to chase him away? Let him bluff again at the end. And that's what I'm worried about. It's not that I don't think I'm ahead right now. It's that you're back into something, and I would rather not back into it. You get a decent pot at that point, right? $90 in a 1-1 game is huge, especially for a king queen.
Absolutely. All right, Jeff, thanks for the hand. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.